Yeah, I know. It's tough. You guys, this is a long day for you guys. I really got to hand it to you. It is insanely warm. You're not, but I'm sorry. No, you guys have done really well. This is a lot of doing and going and thinking and all of those things. And it's a very full day, so I get it. And so hang in with me one last section here. So this last one we're going to talk about is called delayed gratification, the difference between cravings and longings. Here's the thing. You can have whatever life you want. But ultimately, your life will come down to one of two things. It's going to either come down to you got the things you craved or you got the things you longed for. Cravings tend to be short-term things. I crave a donut. Right? That's something you see the donut, you go, that sounds really good, I want it, it's a craving. But the moment you have the donut, it's gone. And it really didn't improve your life very much. I long for heaven. Now those are both things I want, but are they in the same category? Is a donut and heaven, yeah, I want a donut and I also want to go to heaven, but would you put those really as being equivalent to each other in any way, shape, or form? No, they're very different. And that one is a craving, the other is a longing. And your life will be full of times when you have things that you crave, and then there will be really in your life probably just a few things that you long for. So you'll have lots of cravings, but very few longings. And the problem is because there's so many things that you will find that you crave and that you didn't even know you craved. That's where advertising comes in sometimes. Is all of a sudden there's an advertisement, you're like, I didn't know I wanted that till right now. I didn't know they had a new flavor of Slurpee. And so all of a sudden, like, that craving comes in. There's so many of those that the longings, even though they're so much more important, can get lost in the mix. But here's the key. You can have whatever life you want. God has always said that. He said it to the Israelites in Deuteronomy 30. He says, see, I've set before you today life and prosperity and death and adversity. Now, that's a big statement. When God took Israel into the land, He said, you can have whatever life you want, and I've set them both in front of you. You can have this kind of life or this kind of life. You can have life and prosperity or death and adversity. But the thing is, life and prosperity would require them to pursue things that were longings, whereas death and adversity, which is the one, by the way, which they ended up choosing. Isn't that crazy? God says, here's your two choices. You can have life or you can have death. Pretty simple decision, isn't it? I want life. But in practicality, they chose death because they grumbled, they complained, they chose the idols, they stopped serving God, and so death came in. God tells you can have either one. But it's going to come down to three words. And these are the things I want you to remember. For every right, you have a responsibility and there are consequences. For every right, you have a responsibility and there are consequences. That's what Deuteronomy 30 points out. If you look here at these verses, I've set before you today life and prosperity and death and adversity. That's a right. You can have whatever life you want. But then he says, but if your heart turns away and you will not obey, you shall surely perish. Well, that's a consequence. And right in the middle he says, I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in His ways and to keep His commandments, His statutes, and His judgments, that you may live and multiply. That's a responsibility. In other words, you can have whatever life you want, but if you want this life, you have some responsibilities you have to get it. And there are consequences either way. If you follow through with your responsibilities, there's some good consequences. If you don't follow through with those responsibilities, there's some bad consequences. And this is true in every area of your life. And so all we're going to do tonight is just look at various things that are this way. You have the right to be a Christian. That is not a small thing. The right to be called by the name of the Son of God. When we say, I am a Christian, what we're really saying is that I belong to Jesus, the Son of God. He has saved me and He loves me. John 1 says, as many as received Him, to them He gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in His name. I have six kids. those six kids have a different relationship with me than any other children in this room. It's just fundamentally different. They call me Dad. Actually, they call me Papa. They think it's weird when one of them calls me Dad. But I have a unique relationship with them that is different than any other child on the planet. That's what John 1 says happens when you become a Christian. He gave you the right to become children of God. Now, when you become a child of God, your relationship with Him changes. In the same way that my six kids, they have more love and affection from me than any other child on the planet. But guess who also are the ones that I am more likely to discipline? I don't discipline other people's kids. That's not my problem. It's like not my responsibility. My responsibility is mine. So when we become children of God, we have a right, but we also then have some responsibilities. He says, if you're going to become a Christian, 1 Peter says you have to long for the pure spiritual milk. Well, what is, when he says long for the pure spiritual milk, and to continue on with that, he says we're like babes, we should long for it. He's talking about food. What food should you long for if you're a Christian? What's the milk he's talking about? The Bible. That's right. He says, look, you need to want to learn the Bible. That's your responsibility. Nobody can do that for you. No preacher can make you long for the Bible. It's got to be you. You've got to step up and want that for yourself. Your parents can't do it for you. Your friends can't do it for you. Your neighbors can't do it for you. The people in the congregation who want you to grow up and become a Christian, they can't do it for you. You've got to do it. It's your responsibility. You also have the responsibility, Hebrews 10:25, if you're a Christian, not neglecting to meet together. That is the responsibility of being a Christian. When somebody becomes a Christian but then doesn't come to services because they're busy doing other things, they're not doing their job. Now, what has God given us? If you're a Christian, you have the right to become a child of God. Is that a big deal or not? You belong to Him. He loves you as a father does his children. But He does expect some things of you. And this shouldn't surprise us, right? Because as kids, do our parents expect some things from us? That's a very normal thing, right? So it doesn't mean they don't love us. It means that they do. Well, one of the things He expects of you is to show up. Now, here's the thing. When you're a kid, you show up because your parents drag you there. That's how it starts. But remember what this weekend is about? It's about discipline and not other people disciplining you. Where's the discipline supposed to come from? Inside. You are self-disciplined. If you are a Christian, I don't care what your age is, or if you are considering becoming a Christian, I want you to ask yourself, would I come to services if my parents didn't take me? Like if my parents all of a sudden, they stopped caring about the Lord, would I call somebody up and get a ride? Would I figure it out? Because if you're at the point where you're willing to do that, to come to services and to be with the saints, even if the rest of your family dogged it, you're ready to be a Christian. Because you've taken that responsibility for yourself and you're not expecting other people to do it for you. Another responsibility is be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Paul said this, you should imitate the Apostle Paul just like he imitates Christ. We go to the Bible and we try and be more like those people. That's our responsibility, to look in our own lives and say, how can I be more like the people that I read about in the Bible? That's not other people's job. That's yours. Now, people can help you with it. And that's the whole point of preaching. Like the reason I'm preaching is to make you think about things that maybe you haven't thought about before. But realistically, if you aren't interested, what good is it? Doesn't do anything. It's just words. It's just like the old Charlie Brown. Wah, 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 wah. You know, the adults in Charlie Brown. Anybody ever seen that? The adults, they don't actually say words. They just sound wah, 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 wah. I know that's what I sound like to some people. I can't do anything about that. But if you honestly, desperately want to serve the Lord, I want to present material that will help you along the journey you want to take. But that ultimately is your responsibility to figure it out. If you are part of a large congregation or a small congregation, you can't put it on everybody else. People in large congregations, one real strength of that is you've got a lot of other people who can help you, but one real weakness of being a part of a large congregation is there's other people who could do the jobs and study you. Right? It's easy to slip through the cracks. If you're in a small congregation, it can be a little bit more in your face, but it can also be a lot harder to get started. Either way, it's on you. You have to want it, and that's your responsibility. It's not on other people. James 1, but be doers of the word and not hearers only. Hearers are people who listen to it and it goes in one ear and out the other. Doers are people who when they hear preaching or when they study their Bible, they say, how does this apply to me? Not how does this apply to the next guy, but how does this apply to me? That's what it means to be a doer of the word, is to walk out and say, okay, what can I do about what I just learned? Application Christianity. These are our responsibilities. And there's consequences to those. If you follow through with your responsibilities, there's consequences. And if you don't, there's consequences. And Jesus points those out in Matthew 7. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and acts on them may be compared to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not act on them, that's your choice, right? Will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the end of that story is, what happens to that house? A big storm comes through and the waves, and depending on the foundation of the house, it either survived or it didn't. So, when it comes to being a Christian, do you have to be a Christian? God won't make you. But you do have a right. And with that right comes responsibilities. And there's consequences to your choice. Next one, the right to romance. You have the right to romance. You have the right to get married. The Bible has made it very clear, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 28, if you do marry, you've not sinned. Now, this is just one of many verses that make it very clear. If you want to get married, you can do that. Probably not at 10. But at some point in your life, you will have the choice to get married. Totally, you're right. You will also have the choice to not get married. If you chose to stay single your entire life, would you sin in doing that? Is there a sin in remaining single? Absolutely not at all. In fact, Paul will say, if you stay single, your life might be a little bit easier. Sorry. But there's no sin one way or the other. So you have a right to it. You have a freedom. I've said before you, marriage or not marriage. But there's responsibilities that come with it. You shouldn't get married without thinking about it. One, 1 Corinthians 7 says that if you get married, your interests are going to be divided. Meaning you can no longer just live for yourself. There's another human being on this planet you're responsible for. And you've got to be okay with that. Because sometimes they're not happy and you are happy. And you think, I don't want to really deal with they're not happy because I'm happy right now. Well, what does the Bible say? If your spouse is miserable and you're happy, do you go, bummer for you, I'm happy. Is that what it says? No. Their sorrow is your sorrow, so you figure it out. Like if your spouse has had a crummy day and you've had an awesome day, you sit and you listen to their crummy day and you don't tell them about your great day. Like you just listen and you say, I'm so sorry, honey. Like, that's interest being divided. You don't get to just do what you want. And so that comes with marriage, which is one of the reasons that we caution people about getting married. Have you ever noticed that married people oftentimes are the ones who are telling single people to be careful about getting married? It's not that they don't think marriage is a good thing. It's that they know that it's a big thing. And so the responsibility is your interests are going to be divided. Songs of Solomon says, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. Another responsibility you have with romance, with marriage, with love is don't force it. This is something you find that Solomon dealt with in that particular book of the Old Testament was, if you're somebody who just goes looking for a spouse because you just want to get married at all cost, you be careful. You be careful. A woman who goes out there and she says, I'm going to just catch me a man, she's going to catch herself the wrong kind of man, the kind you want to throw back. Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. Be careful about it. And I know it's funny, but it's not funny if you're married to a bad dude. Read about Abigail. Her husband's name was Nabal. It means worthless, and the Bible says he was. Abigail was married to a man whose name meant worthless, and he lived up to his name. Can you imagine being married to somebody like that? It'd be awful. So be careful. Be very careful, especially in the country that we live in where we have the freedom of who we choose to marry. That's a big freedom. Don't waste it. You have a responsibility. Be careful there. Malachi 2:15 says, what was the one God seeking? Godly offspring. One of the things that God says you have a responsibility if you get married is, if you get married, there's a very high likelihood after you get married, what are you going to have? So you're probably going to have kids. It's not a guarantee. I understand that there are exceptions, but realistically, marriage leads to children most of the time. Well, kids are great. She just said most of the time. When I say, kids are great, and I hear, most of the time. Kids are great most of the time. But realistically, if you get married, you're now responsible for this tiny person who is going to require from you all of you. And your job is to raise them to know their real father, their heavenly father. And that is a huge responsibility. So if you're going to get married, that's great. It's an awesome thing. But you got to think about what you're doing. Genesis 2:24, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother. We'd really love to get married and continue to live in your basement. No. Okay, that's not how that works. I understand that's how it started to work, but that's not the way it's supposed to work. Marriage is a commitment to start a new family. And that means you don't tell your new wife that your mom cooks better than her. You don't do that. She brings you a meal and you don't go, it's just not like mom. That's how you die. Like you start a new family. Right? You start a new family. And so marriage is an exciting thing because you're starting a new family. But that also means you got to start doing stuff that maybe mom and dad were doing for you. You got to leave and cleave and build your own family. And that's part of the responsibility of it. And I will tell you, marriages where they don't do that, they don't succeed. Marriages where he's always going back to mommy for her advice. Or where she's always going back to her family and they're telling her how to run her marriage. That doesn't work. You've got to be your own family. And that's a responsibility that God gives us. So does God believe in marriage? Absolutely. Does he think romance is a good thing? Yeah, absolutely. But there are responsibilities with it. And there's consequences one way or the other. Proverbs 12 says, an excellent wife is the crown of her husband. If you marry an excellent wife, you'll feel like a king every day. I do. That's not a joke. That's really true. I feel like a king every single day. But she who brings shame is like rottenness in his bones. A bad wife's like leukemia. That's what that says. Marry well. Genesis 2:18, the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I'll make him a helper fit for him. All of a sudden you become a team, and it's no longer just what one of you wants, but it's what both of you want. This is why it's a grown-up decision. I am not a fan of introducing children to romance while they are children. Like, you'll have plenty of years, but if these things scare you, don't date. That's my advice. Don't date. If this stuff is still at the point where it's like scaring you and you go, I can't see myself doing any of that, then don't date. Because what you're doing is you're fooling around with something that you're not ready for. Proverbs 30:21-23 says, three things the earth trembles under, and one of them is an unloved woman when she gets a husband. Remember I talked about you just catch yourself a mate, and people will do this. So they catch them. Well, there's an example of that in the Bible of a woman who just caught herself a husband, and it's Leah. Remember the story of Leah and her little sister Rachel. And Leah tricked Jacob into marrying her. Now, she had some help from her dad, and that's a whole other piece of work. But Jacob wakes up the next morning, and he realizes that he's married to a woman he didn't intend to marry. Do you think he loved her? Do you think she had a happy life? That woman caught herself a man, but she ruined her life in it. So we want to understand, with every right we have, with every, there are responsibilities that come with it, and there are consequences that come with it. next one, you have a right to work. Ecclesiastes 2:24 says, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink and make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. When God made Adam and Eve, he put them in the garden and he told them, this whole earth that's yours, multiply and subdue it. Like you can make cool stuff. That's part of what we've been given the freedom to do on this planet, is that we can make skyscrapers and bridges and the internet, and we can do all sorts of crazy things. Whatever we want to work and achieve, we can achieve essentially anything, because God's given us an amazing canvas called the universe to work with. It's fantastic. So if you want to work and do something new and cool and amazing, do it. You want to find a career where you save lives as a doctor, or you build skyscrapers as an architect or an engineer, or you write music that causes people to weep when they hear it. I don't care what you want to pursue. You can do it. But there's a responsibility that comes with work. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8 says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. One of the things that comes with work is a responsibility to do good with that work. I will tell you this advice that I tell my own children. I do not care what you become when you grow up as long as you are good. That's all I care about. I don't care what your job is. I don't care what your title is. I just care that you're good. Because a good person who's a bricklayer is 1,000 times better than a wicked man who's a multi-billionaire. I could care less about any of that external stuff. Whatever you find to do, do it with character and use it as an opportunity to provide for others. To be somebody who's giving. Because the first thing that begins to happen when you work is you start to reap benefits of that. And some of it, Ecclesiastes says, enjoy it. Eat, drink. Enjoy the good in your labor. Like, you get your first paycheck. Any of you here have a job? Do you like the first paycheck? It's nice. Like, it's way better than what you're getting paid by your parents for chores around the house or whatever. Like, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, that's a lot of money. My parents have been chintzing out. Yeah, we totally have. You are child labor. But then you get that first job and you get all that money, and now all of a sudden it's like, I have an ability to take that check, that amount of money, and I can do something purely for myself with that, or I could take some of that money and eat and drink and enjoy the good of my labor, and then take some of that and use it to do good. I want you to build the habit of using whatever money you have to not just use it all on yourself. Use some of it on yourself. God says you should. But then take a portion of it and use it to do good for other people. Because when you start that habit of being responsible, of sharing with good things with other people, and you keep that with you your whole life, man, you will make a difference. Colossians 3 verse 23 says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Here's this other thing that happens. When you first start working, it's cool because you get that paycheck, and all of a sudden you're in this whole new world where people are giving you money for doing stuff. But then, after a certain amount of time, and I'm not sure exactly when it happens, I'm not sure the moment, but it happens, all of a sudden it becomes routine, and you realize you don't have to work as hard as you did at first. And what I want you to do is to fight that. I have a buddy who went to work for Boeing. Boeing's a very big company. And when he went to work for Boeing, he had somebody come up to him on his first day and he handed him a map and he said, these are all the places that you could hide and nobody could find you. So that you could just, you know, punch in for the day, go into these little corners and areas, you'd get paid and you didn't have to do any work. And he thought he was doing him a favor. Thankfully, my buddy is one of the hardest workers I've ever known. And every day he goes to work and Boeing flies airplanes because of guys like him. But there will always be that temptation when you're out in the workforce to give less than your best. Don't do it, because you're not just stealing from the company when you do that, you're stealing from yourself. Because when you don't give your best, you never find out what your best is either. So whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Don't worry about the paycheck. If they're paying you a lot or paying you a little, you think, I want God to look down and be proud with how I work today. Did I sweat from my brow the way I would if Jesus were watching me? And you begin to build that responsibility into your mindset of work, and believe me, you'll go places. And there's consequences either way, right? If you're lazy, it says the desire of the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. Somebody who won't work never gets out of the parents' basement. And they wish they had a better life, they wish they had all these things, but they were just too lazy to ever do it. And the problem with tomorrow, which is what we all say, I'll do it tomorrow, is tomorrow never happens. There is no such thing as tomorrow. It's always a day off. You only have today. And so the sluggard, the lazy person, that sluggard is like an old King Jamesy way of saying it. I like it because it sounds like a slug, and that's not only slow but disgusting. And that's what laziness is to God. It's slow and disgusting. Because God made you with hands and feet and eyes. You have muscles and tendons. You have the ability to do great and amazing things. And we decide to hide so we can get out of work. That's horrific. What a waste of the gift. Whatever you've got, whatever time you have, do something with it. The sluggard is only left with regret. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, for even when we were with you, we would give you this command, if anyone's not willing to work, let him not eat. This may sound hard, but God's attitude towards the person who won't work is, don't feed them. Because we want them to learn to work. Not because I want them to die. Oh, you won't work? Well, die. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is, if you won't work, don't let him eat, because eventually, if he gets hungry enough, what will he do? He will work eventually, right? And we want people to learn to work because that's a valuable thing. So you have a right to work, you also have a right not to work, but you don't have a right to not work and expect the world to take care of you. That is not biblical. It may be American right now, but it's not biblical. Biblically, we are called to greater things. Proverbs 22:29 says, do you see a man skillful in his work? He'll stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. So, I watch weird stuff on YouTube. So I don't know what people have in their mind that preachers would pay attention to on YouTube, but the stuff that I watch are craftsmen. Part of that is, my dad was a woodshop teacher, so that's kind of all in my head, but if you watch people who are really impressive woodworking craftsmen, like they can make stuff on the lathe, or they can build a grandfather clock with just old-fashioned chisels and planes, what you're seeing is somebody who has an ability that they have honed to the point of being just the best it possibly can. And people like that get noticed. You have a right to work, and then you have a responsibility to work the best you can, and there's a consequence to that. People will notice that you work hard and that you give your best, and you will get on somebody's radar. And so do it every single day. Every single chance you have, give your very best. Compete with yourself always to be better than what you are right now. You have a right to share the gospel. Now, when I say right, I'm not talking about what you should do or shouldn't do. Right? When God says, I have set before you life and death. That's a right to life and a right to death. But what should you choose? You should choose life. Don't be a dummy and choose death. That's a poor decision. But you have a right to it. You can do whichever one you want. When we said we have a right to share the gospel, it's the same way. You can either tell people about Jesus and be a light to the world, or you can choose not to. You can do either one, but which one should you want to do? You should be evangelistic. You should share the gospel. You should be a light to the world. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 15, he says, "But by the grace of God I am what I am, and His grace which was bestowed upon me was not found vain, but I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God which was with me." When I think about Paul and his life and all that he went through, I wonder what must it have been like to see so many people obey the gospel and become Christians? To start congregations in cities like Ephesus and Corinth and Thessalonica and Philippi, and then to go back years later and to see that they were successful and abundant and people loved God and were praising Him. What a gift that must have been. I mean, for all the hard things that Paul went through, that's something very special that he got. Paul says, "By the grace of God, I am what I am. I have a second chance because God didn't give up on me, and so I didn't waste that opportunity." When you become a Christian, what you're saying is, "I recognize that I need God and I have sinned. And that because of those sins, I would be separated from God eternally. I would go to hell if it were not for Jesus' love for me." And Paul said, that grace propelled me to share the gospel with other people. We have a responsibility with evangelism. 2 Timothy 3, verse 15 says, "The sacred writings which are able to make you wise for salvation." You cannot share the gospel if you don't know the gospel. One of the biggest values to memorizing Scripture, which is a hard thing to do because you don't just memorize it. Memorizing Scripture doesn't seem to work like memorizing songs. Have you ever noticed that? You don't ever have to actively try and memorize a song, and yet how many songs in the songbooks do you probably have memorized? It just kind of happens almost by default. Have you ever noticed that that is not the way Scriptures work? You don't get to do it that easily. You have to really work at it. You have to post it, you know, on your bathroom mirror and look at it every morning, and you have to make a habit out of it. That's the only way that you'll memorize Scriptures. But one of the great values of memorizing Scriptures is that now you know those verses when you go out and talk to people. There's going to be lots of times when you have a chance to talk to somebody about the gospel and you won't have a Bible with you, so you better be the Bible. It better be in here. If you're going to be evangelistic, it doesn't just happen. You're going to have to learn those verses. And so one of the responsibilities we have is to learn the sacred writings, learn the Scriptures. The other is you've got to be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is within you. If we go out and tell people that they should become Christians, and we're trying to convince them to become Christians, but we have no good defense, we look stupid, and it makes it seem like Christ is stupid. Now, is that true? If you don't have a defense for the gospel, you don't have a good reason for why you're a Christian, does that mean there isn't a good reason? No, it just means you didn't have it. But you have a responsibility to prepare for that. It's one of the reasons that it's good to take classes on how to convert people. I have a series of classes that I take people through on how to teach people to become Christians. And I do that because if you're going to go out and teach, you need to be prepared for it. You need to know the verses. You need to know what their arguments might be. You know, somebody brings up something, you need to be prepared to say, okay, well, this would be the answer for it. Now, sometimes you're going to have to just say, look, I don't know the answer. I'll get back to you. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if we're going to say we're going to share the gospel and be a light in the world, you can't just say that and not prepare. It requires preparation. Philippians 3, verse 16, he says, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The other thing is that if we're going to be evangelistic, now Paul will say some people preach Christ for the wrong reasons, and at least Christ is being spoken about, but his point was, there you can preach and share the gospel for the wrong reasons. If your goal is to know the Scriptures so that you can make people feel stupid who don't know the Scriptures, that is a wrong reason. It can't be about you. So one of the things, if we're going to be a light unto the world, is we've got to empty ourselves of envy and replace it with goodwill. We've got to learn to love people. And that's something that only happens with effort. You learn to love people. It's a habit that you build over time. Mark chapter 6, verse 15 says, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel. If you're going to proclaim the gospel, where are you going to have to go? Into all the world. So I can't sit at home all day and plan on being an evangelistic person? Nope. Well, I'd really like to share the gospel, but all of my friends are Christians. You know what you need? You need new friends. Don't get rid of the Christian friends. But I'm saying you need to go out and be friends with people who are not Christians yet. Now, there's layers of friendship. I'm not saying your best friends should be non-Christians. Because there's another verse on that. Bad company does what? Corrupts good morals. So if your closest friends are not Christians, that is not a good thing. But can you be friends with somebody without them being your bestest BFF ever? Yeah, absolutely you can. And should Christians be friends and friendly to people who are not Christians? Absolutely. It scares me when Christians only do things with other Christians and they never invite non-Christians into their homes or into their lives or do things with them, because I think, are we really being a light in the world at that point? Or are we doing exactly what Jesus said we shouldn't, which is we're putting a basket over the light? So part of being evangelistic is understanding you have a responsibility to get out there into the world around you. And there's consequences to that. Matthew chapter 10, verse 32 through 33 says, everyone therefore who shall confess me before men, him will I also confess before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father who is in heaven. A Christian that says, I'm not going to share the gospel, has essentially said, I am not going to confess Christ to the world. And what is Jesus' answer to that? If you don't confess me, then I won't confess you before my Father. So there's consequences. Every Christian has to be evangelistic. Now that doesn't, some people are going to be better at it than others. Some are going to have more practice than others. But every one of us needs to get up in the morning and think in our mind, if there's an opportunity for me to invite somebody to services or to mention Jesus to somebody, or to even as simply as talk to somebody and when they mention something's going on in their life, say, would you like me to pray for you? And I like to phrase it that way, by the way, versus just saying, I'll pray for you. Because what I've done is I've given them an invitation to be a part of that at that point. It's like, would you like me to pray for you? Because now I'm getting them to think a little bit. I don't know. Do I care about prayers? Does that matter to me? Those sorts of things. If you have those sorts of opportunities, you and I all have a responsibility to take advantage of it. Proverbs 11, verse 30 says, the fruit of the righteous is the tree of life, and whoever wins souls is wise. Remember one of the things that we talked about, we just talked about in the last lesson? Wisdom is a really powerful thing. If you're somebody who goes out to win souls and to win people over to Christ, what will you do? He who wins souls is wise. You're going to become wise. So those things, they fit together. And then last, James chapter 5, verse 20, let him know that he who converts a sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall cover a multitude of sins. The other thing that happens that's a consequence if we become lights to the world and sharing the gospel is you have the ability to save people from their sins by pointing them to Jesus. So you think about all the joy that we talk about Christians having. What if you could give all that joy to somebody else? So the more that we look at those things, and by the way, all of these things that we talk about, require you to have delayed gratification. This thing that I want, I can't have it right away. You want to be better at evangelism? It doesn't happen overnight. You want to find a good spouse? It doesn't happen overnight. You want to live a Christian life? It doesn't happen overnight. All of those things are right for you to have. You can have those things. But we've got to decide we're going to be responsible for our piece of it if we wish to have the consequences of life and prosperity that God intends for us. Okay, with that, I am done. Thank you guys so much for your time today, especially Saturday at this meeting. Every time it is the long one, and I know it's a full day, and I really appreciate you guys. Thank you so, so much.